Ladies and gentlemen, please rise for the playing of our national anthem.
Baseball fans, you're listening to Fabes Babes.
Hello.
Hello there.
Welcome back to another episode of Fabes Babes. Today's show is a really special one as we honor Black History Month and the legacy of the Negro Leagues. But joining us is a very special guest, Gerald Watkins. Gerald, thank you so much for being here tonight.
Well, it's a real pleasure. I can't wait to jump into the topic of baseball in Birmingham and Rickwood Field and anything else that you guys want to talk about.
Absolutely. So Gerald is the executive director of Friends of Rickwood, which is the organization dedicated to preserving and promoting America's oldest ballpark, Rickwood Field. Of the ballparks that served as the primary home parks for Negro League teams, just five remain throughout the country, and the oldest of those five is Rickwood Field. More remarkably, however, is that it is the oldest ballpark in the, I just said that. Although Rickwood Field was first utilized as a Negro Leagues park in 1920, Rickwood dates all the way back to 1910, making it older than such venerable ballparks as Boston's Fenway Park and Chicago's Wrigley Field. Rickwood Field, which is located in Birmingham, Alabama, continues to serve as a playing field for high school and college teams. Rickwood Field served as the home of the Birmingham Barons, who alternated with the Birmingham Black Barons from 1920 to 1962, and many legends passed through those gates. In 1948, the Black Barons added a player who we all know, an iconic figure. They signed 17-year-old outfielder named Willie Mays, who was still in high school at the time. Under an unusual arrangement, Mays played only at Rickwood Field and not in road games, presumably so that he could still attend high school and play for the varsity team. Mays would appear in 17 games for Birmingham and bat just .233 that year while playing the outfield corners. That same year, Mays and the Black Barons advanced to the Colored World Series, which was played for the final time that year, where they lost in five games to the powerhouse Homestead Grays of Pittsburgh. Over the next three seasons, Mays emerged as a superstar. The large dimensions of Rickwood Field allowed him to show off his full arsenal of athleticism, and the Giants went on to sign him in June of 1950. On June 20th, 2023, Major League Baseball announced that a regular season game between the St. Louis Cardinals and San Francisco Giants would be played at Rickwood Field on June 20th, 2024, as part of a salute to the Negro Leagues in observance of Juneteenth. So, Gerald, with that, we thank you so much for preserving the rich history of Rickwood Field, and we thank you for joining us tonight. We want to glean your insights into the rich history of the field, its significance in baseball history, and the exciting updates on the preservation efforts. But before we do that, I'm going to turn it over to Kelsey, and she's going to kick us off with an around the horn question.
Great.
So we like to kick our episodes off with kind of like a little icebreaker question, just something fun that maybe has to do with, you know, the time we're at in life right now. And of course, tomorrow is Valentine's Day. And last week, Jonna and I were on a podcast where they asked us, what is the thing that you love most about the game of baseball? We had a listener ask that. And I had actually, of all of the things that I've been asked or we've asked each other about, that was the first time that anyone had ever really asked me, what is it? What is the thing that you love most about the game of baseball? So, Jonna, why don't you answer first if you've got an answer off the top of your head, and then we'll pass it around.
Yeah, so I'm sorry for like the long-winded intro and kind of my long-winded answer to this question, but I like literally typed it out today because it's a lot, right? Like my answer is a lot of things. I love everything about baseball, but what I love the most is actually it ties in very well with the theme of tonight. I am a very nostalgic person by nature anyway. So the fact that I resonate with its rich history is, and its relationship with American culture is, would be like no surprise to anyone who knows me well. So one of the most captivating aspects of baseball is its timeless quality. The game has been played for generations, connecting people across time and geography. And when you step into a ballpark like Rickwood Field, you're not just witnessing a game, but you're stepping into a living museum. So, you know, baseball's significance extends beyond the field. It has mirrored and often influenced societal shifts from the racial integration exemplified by Jackie Robinson to the resilience and unity seen after tragedies like 9/11. The sport has served as a backdrop for social change, highlighting both the best and worst of American society. So that is what I love about baseball the most, is the connection that I have like on a deep history level.
You are always good for the history of it. Sometimes I feel like I get really wrapped up in, you know, just all the day-to-day goings-ons, but you keep me grounded there. Gerald, I know that's a deep, deep question, but what do you think the thing is that you love the most about the game of baseball? What initially drew you to it?
Well, there's a lot. So do I have hour, 2 hours, 3 hours? You tell me when to stop. But let me tell you this.
Explore as long as you want. That's why we're here.
I think I've come to realize over the past couple of years that the most important thing to me about baseball is the people involved in baseball. And I have a saying, it's kind of corny, but what I tell people is that baseball people are the best people. And the fans that love baseball are different than football fans. And you know, I'm in Alabama. I'm a fan of the Crimson Tide. And everybody here loves football, Alabama, Auburn, whatever. But I grew up in an age when, for some reason, I gravitated to baseball. The names of Mickey Mantle and Whitey Ford and Yogi Berra just grabbed me when I was really, really young. And so I've just always loved baseball more than any other sport. But the people that I meet and have met over the years have just been incredible. From the ball players that I've met, and I've been fortunate enough to have met practically every ball player that I ever wanted to meet except Sandy Koufax. But I got to meet Mickey Mantle. I've had time with Willie Mays. I just mentioned a little while ago, Albert Pujols. I've got several friends who are ball players. But the people that come to the ballpark, they always come and they're in a good mood when they get there, and they're in a better mood when they leave, because they experience a walk back in time. And baseball is such a sport that everybody can relate to it. You don't have to be 6'8 or 6'9 and have the skills of an NBA forward. You don't have to have the speed or the size of an NFL player. Anybody can get on a field and take a swing and hit a ball or catch it. And it's relative. Everybody, just like the two of you, young ladies, it's a sport that can reach everyone. And there's so much that can happen with the conversations. You go to a ball game, take for example, you go to a baseball game and you can sit next to a total stranger, and in no time you can be talking about statistics or history, the current players, the past players, their baseball skills, their baseball travels, all of that. You go to a football game and nobody knows how many touchdowns got scored. All they know is, okay, Alabama's 9-0, or Alabama beat Auburn, or Auburn's get a new coach. I mean, all those things are different. Baseball people are just special in that way. And when they come to Rickwood, we have old baseball gloves. We invite anyone that wants to go out on the field and just take a few throws, a catch with a glove that was made in 1928. And everybody can do it. And everybody can talk the talk. Not everybody is on the same level as maybe the three of us, but everybody can find a point in baseball that they can enjoy. And you can share it in a way that's different because it's deeper. I don't want to offend any football fans, but there's not many people out there that can probably tell me who's the all-time leader in touchdowns or rushing in the NFL. But you talk about baseball, they'll know it's Barry Bonds. They'll know he broke Hank Aaron's record, who broke Babe Ruth's record. So baseball just has that appeal to people, and it draws people together, and it creates friendships. It creates a strong bond between parents and children, and just friends in general. So people, that's my line if I have to have one about why I love baseball.
It transcends time. You know, we've talked about that a lot on our podcast here, how we've connected with our grandparents or our dads, and just that, even that family lineage that we all have there is special.
Well, you guys basically said it all. I don't know what there is left for me to say, but absolutely. It is the community, the culture, the environment of being at a baseball game or even watching a baseball game. It's one of the only like mainstream sports that actually inspires conversation during the game and connection in a, you know, just on a different level, more of than just a surface level. And I've always said that I love like the strategy behind it, but I think that's because of how it mirrors life in so many ways and how you can apply it, you know, both on and off the field. And yeah, the people are just, there is something different about people who love baseball. And I love how you mentioned too, that, yeah, you can't necessarily pinpoint a baseball player walking on the street. There's a lot of people from different walks of life and with different skill sets that can be really successful in and around the game. So yeah, I mean, I don't have to pick just one thing. I'm going to pick everything you guys said that I love most about it. You said it very well.
I'll say this too. When you walk through the tunnel and you see the field and you see the grass, it's the greenest grass you're ever going to see. The background, all the colors are wonderful. And the movements of the players as they go through their actions, whether it's throwing ground balls, catching ground balls, swinging the bat. One of the most beautiful things in the world to me is a well-turned double play. Just all the coordination and all the skill. And if you had any level of playing, you can relate to it, even though you can't do it. So it's just it's a special sport, and I don't know where I would be without it.
Yeah, same.
Well, that was a good way to get us going. I'm feeling the love already.
Yes. So, Gerald, if we can, we just like to just dive in and ask you a bunch of questions about your background and kind of how you got to where you are today. So with that, how did you get involved and when did you decide to get involved with Rick Whitfield?
I was a banker for 42 years. And during my banking career, bankers were always encouraged to get involved in community activities. And at one time I was on the board of the Heart Association here in Birmingham. And that was very fulfilling, and I met a lot of nice people. But then the Friends of Rickwood were being formed in the early 90s, and I went to my boss and I said, you know, I think I could really make an impact if I join that board. And I've been on the Heart board a couple of years. If I move over there, I can do good things over there. And so I joined the board in the mid-90s, and I was a board member for a while. And then probably in about 2010, they asked me to be chairman of the board. And so I said, sure, I'd love it. I became chairman, and I oversaw the executive director of the ballpark. And we had a board of about 32 people, and everybody's a volunteer except for a couple of people. And so we were doing everything we could to support our staff and try to promote the ballpark and all that. And then at the end of 2020, I retired from my banking career after 42 years, and I didn't have a plan for what I was going to do. And the executive director that we had at Rickwood was ready to move on. And I told the guys on the board, hey, I'll take it on for a few weeks and see how things go. And a few weeks turned into now 3.5 years, and it's been a blessing. I mean, I love every day I go to the park. There's so many good things that happen. And I've just enjoyed the heck of it. But I'll tell you a funny story. Are you tight on time?
Oh, no.
I'm in college. And in our psychology class, our professor wanted to do something to break the monotony of his lectures and our studies. And so he brought into our class a gypsy fortune teller. Now, I was in my freshman or sophomore year of college. And he made it available for anyone in the class to go up and have their fortune told. And my best friend said, oh, I'm not going to do that. If they tell you something bad, it'll ruin your life. You'll be thinking about it all the time. And I said, look, I'm a believer. I don't believe in this stuff. I mean, I believe in God and all of that. I don't believe in gypsy fortune tellers, but why not? It'll be fun. So she took my hand and she ran her fingers up and down my hand and said, I'm going to tell you three things about your life. And I said, okay, I'm ready. And so she said, you're going to be around a lot of money. Well, at that time, I had not declared a major. I had no idea that I would ever work in a bank. So I'm around a lot of money. Didn't say I was going to have it, but I'm around it. Okay. She said, the next thing, she said, you're going to have three serious romances and the next one will be your wife. Well, I dated three girls before I ended up meeting my wife, got married. There you go. 40 years. We have our 40th anniversary coming up on the 19th of this month. But the last thing she said, she ran her fingers up and down my arm. As I said, she said, have you ever thought about being a baseball player? And I said, well, I thought about that every minute of my life, but ships kind of sailed. I'm in college now. My skill level is not good enough to be in the big league. So yeah, I kind of moved on from that. She said, well, have you ever thought about being a sports writer? And I said, no, really not. I'm okay with English, but I don't care about doing that. I just don't. Have you ever thought about being a coach? I said, yeah, but you know, anyway, she said, well, there's baseball in your future. So the rest, as they say, is history. As I got older, I got in the Friends of Rickwood, and there were two or three other things. Me and my best friend set up a part-time job promoting baseball card shows, and we did that for about 8 years. In addition to, we were both bankers in addition to that. So that moved into Rickwood and just some other things. Now, not only am I involved at Rickwood, but I am on the board of two charities. One is called the American Baseball Foundation, and it is actually a group that promotes learning math and reading while incorporating the skills of that into baseball. So you go and the kids read for 30 minutes, and if they do well, they get to go on the field and play baseball. So it's kind of a cool thing. And then the Alabama Baseball Coaches Association is a thing I'm involved with. They promote the Miracle League, which is baseball for special needs children and young adults. So I've got a lot of baseball activities that I do, and I just enjoy everything about the game and the people surrounding it.
And that fortune teller was right after all. That is wild.
Yeah, that is wild.
Thank you for sharing that, because that's just really fun. Mm-hmm. Well, Gerald, I'm sure that you know all kinds of facts and interesting things that you like to share about Rickwood Field, but what are maybe like two or three interesting facts that you like to share about the field and its history? What can you tell us about, you know, maybe some baseball legends that have passed through?
Well, Rickwood. 182 Hall of Famers have played at Rickwood, and that goes back to the days of Satchel Paige and Babe Ruth to the mid-50s when Mantle and Maris and Mays and Aaron, all those guys played at Rickwood. And one thing that allowed that to happen is in the 40s and 50s and even early 60s, big league teams played a lot of exhibition games, especially on their way north. So they would all train in Florida in those years, and they would get on a train and they would go north and they would travel by night and play by day. And it was a money thing. I mean, it was a way to allow them to make more money. And during those days, the westernmost team was St. Louis. So a lot of people in the South were Cardinal fans. The Braves had not come to Atlanta. So it was just a way to have all these guys coming through Rickwood Field and being able to play there. And then in the later 60s, the Oakland A's were the home team or the parent team to the Birmingham A's, and Reggie Jackson played there when he was 18 or 19 years old. And he was an incredible talent at that level, hit a lot of home runs. They were in the Southern League championship the year he was there in 1967. And on that team, they had Raleigh Fingers, Joe Rudy, and Reggie Jackson. And then the next year they had Vida Blue and some more guys. And so that period of time, the early late 60s, early 70s, created the Oakland A's dynasty. And not only that, but there were so many guys that came through there and played as visiting players. Clayton Kershaw was a member of the Dodgers Farm Club Jacksonville, I guess in 2007 or something like that or whatever. He didn't play in the game, but he was there. So the history of all the people that have played there, it's just pretty incredible. And I don't know of any other ballpark that can claim that. And, you know, that that's just one of the special things about Rickwood Field. And even now, you mentioned college and high school. We are a prime place for Perfect Game to bring their tournaments. So we have 100, 125 games a year at Rickwood. And we have a fantasy camp in the fall. Plus, we have our own home run derby. In the last 2 years, we've had Andrew Jones and Ryan Klesko, former Braves, and a lot of other former big leaguers to come through. And we try to do everything we can to share the park with people and have exciting events so that everybody can love the ballpark as much as some of us do.
Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing. Do you think the reason that they, I mean, obviously Willie Mays being a part of the Giants is reason enough for them to pick the Giants to play in this series. But do you think that they picked the Cardinals to play because there are more Cardinals fans in the South? Is that maybe a part of it?
I think that is a part of it. And I think that they wanted to get Willie Mays here. And they probably looked at the schedule and saw that it would be really compatible to have those two teams and put it together. I had actually campaigned a little bit for a Giants and for a Giants and Dodgers game because of the tie-in to Jackie Robinson and Willie Mays. And, of course, the movie 42 was filmed in part here. So I thought that might be a good mix, but MLB – they had their own ideas, and I'm sure it's going to be wonderful. I really don't know if they understood the great depth of Cardinal fandom in the Southeast, because there was a radio station called KMOX. It may still be in existence.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, you could find KMOX at night, and I would listen to some of the Cardinal games when I was really young. And then the Braves came to Atlanta, and I could pick those games up. But, for whatever reason, I'm thrilled with the matchup. The Cardinal fans are driving me crazy, calling me every day.
I bet.
I know the passion that they have, and I think it's going to be a wonderful matchup.
On behalf of us, I'm sorry. I have not called you yet, Gerald.
Well, a perfect segue into the next question, which is that we know a lot of renovations have had to be done in order to bring it up to MLB par. So can you talk a little bit about that and just kind of tell us what the park's been enduring the last year?
Well, the park was very playable, but not at major league standards. Like I said, 125 games a year and people were generally happy to be there. But the major leagues came in and did a survey and they determined about six things that had to be changed. Number one, I'll start with the playing surface. Even though our playing surface was good, it was not major league quality. So they removed 2 feet of dirt and grass, and they're filling that back in with a superb drainage system, a superb irrigation system. And when they put their turf down or their grass down, it will be as good as any ballpark in the country. They increased the size of our dugouts. Our dugouts were small, and they were built in a time when most men were not over 5'10". And one of the things that an MLB official told me about the dugouts was, we've got to redo these, Gerald, because the size, think about this. What if Bryce Harper came here and struck out and came rushing back to the dugout and forgot to duck? We would have a $30 million player on the ground. So the dugout roof line was too low, and the amount of the staff, the players they have now, the medical staff, the training staff, the camera folks and all that, our dugout would hold maybe 8 or 9 people. So now we have a dugout that's major league size, and there'll be plenty of room for everyone. And I think the vast majority of the people that come and play now are going to like feeling like they're in a big league dugout, because it's going to be better than what they see at high school and college. And once it's painted and dressed up like they will do, it's going to be a showplace on its own. So the dugouts, the field, They also are going to install the protective netting down the foul lines to protect fans from foul balls, which is necessary. They're going to replace our fence in the outfield with a chain link fence with padding so we don't have any injuries from someone crashing into the fence. And basically, that's it more or less. They're also going to change our seating arrangement a little bit to allow for more handicap accessibility. But those are the things that are the biggest impact, and the people that have been coming to Rickwood for a long time, they're going to see all those things, and hopefully they'll accept that we were kind of like a patient on life support waiting for a heart, and MLB came in with the donor heart. So here we are, and all these things will make our ballpark last for maybe another 100 years.
That's excellent. Yeah, it couldn't have come at a better time.
Truly. Yeah, I'm glad that it's getting that tender loving care, little TLC that it deserves, and that, yeah, it just happened to be, it will be special obviously for this Major League Baseball event, but for much longer than that, and at a time when it sounds like it really needed it. So that's
it did, yes.
Cool. One thing that you didn't mention, but was there anything that they had to do to change it up for the media or the media personnel?
There will be some changes. We're not really sure what those are. Our press box will hold maybe a dozen people, and they said to expect 75 press members. So that is still up in the air about how they're going to do that. We are having a visit with an MLB entourage in a couple of weeks, and a lot of things that we don't know now we'll know then. And that's probably one of them. It's just a work in progress.
Sure.
But
well, obviously
we'll be broadcasting the game. It'll be shown to 55 countries. A-Rod, Derek Jeter, and Big Poppy will be there. So it'll have all the trappings of the biggest event in the world. And for a baseball viewership, it will probably only be exceeded by the World Series.
I'm sure. Yeah, and I've also heard that they're prioritizing, obviously, keeping a lot of the history intact of the stadium, too, and that's important and really good to hear. And as part of the history, the Cardinals and the Giants, I read, are going to be wearing the throwback jerseys to highlight the Negro League teams, the St. Louis Stars, and the San Francisco Sea Lions. And then, as Jonna mentioned, it's scheduled around Juneteenth. We're also going to pay tribute to Hall of Famer and Giants legend, who's a Birmingham native and a Birmingham Black Barons player, Willie Mays. Are there other special highlights that will be unique to this game that you can tell us about that maybe even just from watching at home that we might see?
Well, it's actually going to be a three-day event. On Tuesday, the Birmingham Barons and the Montgomery Biscuits are going to play. They will be wearing throwback uniforms. That'll be a dry run for the big event. And then on Wednesday, there is discussion about possibly a charity or celebrity softball game.
Awesome.
I'm told that there could be some A-list celebrities there, no names or anything like that. And that's not written in stone, but that's what they're working on. So we'll have 3 days of events, and it will be all eyes of the baseball world will be on Birmingham for those 3 days. And it will allow a lot of people to see Birmingham in a different light than what they may have envisioned it would be like. Birmingham is a foodie town, not really a tourist destination in the way it is with beach towns and mountain towns, but there's a few things to do here, and we've got some great museums, and I think the people will come away with a good idea about the quality of life we have here in the South, and it'll be good for everyone. The impact on the economy is going to be tremendous, and the game itself is going to be just amazing. So we can't wait.
Yeah.
I hope they do a celebrity softball game. That would be so fun. Would you play in it if they asked you?
If they asked me, yes, but I wouldn't volunteer. But I'm not really a celebrity.
Your post, MLB.
I went to the Yankees fantasy camp 5 years ago, and
cool.
I still throw the ball 3 or 4 times a week during the season, but I think I'll leave that for the younger guys or, like
you're
you
ready.
Said, celebrities. I'm not quite on that list, but it'll be fun, and I just can't wait. I've even thought about just getting caught and sleeping at the ballpark all week. So
there you go. Well, you might find that they need a third base coach or something, you know?
Yeah, I could do that.
Well, Kelsey and I are for hire as well, or free hire. So
yeah,
holler at us if you need
to hang out.
Yeah. But no, so just in talking about the park and all of this, is there a favorite spot that you would recommend to incoming tourists to anywhere in Birmingham or anywhere in the park or around the park that you recommend?
Well, it's not going to be available to the game because of just logistics, but we have a gazebo, I guess you would call it, that sits on our roof directly behind home plate, and that's the very best viewpoint. I love it up there, but for this game, no one will be able to go up there but MLB officials. But when we give tours during the normal year, that's the place where everybody wants to go, and it's just, it's cool being up there. You can see downtown. You can see the original outfield wall. It's really a special place. But inside the ballpark, there's a lot of good seats. We had the Savannah Bananas twice and sold out with almost 10,000 people both times. And nobody complained about the seats. It's an old ballpark. There's not a lot of amenities. Major League Baseball is going to correct some of that with a fan plaza they're going to build across the street from the ballpark. But it's a baseball purist heaven, really. And no better seat than another. Ought to be plenty of foul balls. And I will tell you, this is another spot that's just for viewing. The original outfield wall that was built in 1910 is still intact. The wall that we have now, that's the wall that will be played with, is one that was built in 1936. And so that was to increase the amount of home runs and all that. But the old wall, you look at that, and even these young players that look at it, they just look at it and say, I'm glad I don't have to play in those distances, because nobody would ever hit a home run. It's that long. But it's a concrete wall. We have a plaque out there to mark where Walton Dropo hit the wall in 1948. And we have a plaque out there that talks about when the wall was built, when the new wall was put in, and when the lights were put up. So it's a really cool spot for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating that they used to have concrete walls. There was, there's a picture of Babe Ruth where he had run into a concrete wall and it knocked him out. And he was,
wow, you're amazing. That's a great get.
Yeah, there's, I'll have to share, I'll share it on our social media, but it's a really interesting picture.
That's, and they're true, having yeah. to
like mm-hmm. carry him off the field. He concussed himself.
Gerald, obviously you're a Yankees fan. How did you become a Yankees fan?
Well,
dare I ask?
That's okay. I mentioned earlier, I'm 68, so I grew up in the 60s. And when I first became aware of baseball and television, when you turned on the TV every Saturday, it was always the Yankees and whoever they were going to beat up on. And so I grew up on Roger Maris and Mickey Mantle and Whitey Ford and Yogi Berra. And later in life, I met Cleet Boyer, their third baseman, and became friends with him. So it's just always been amazing for me, the Yankee history. When I was in grade school, I would do all my book reports on Yankee heroes. And when I ran out of them, I would do them on Ty Cobb and Stan Musial and those kind of people. So I just I gravitated to that. And even during the bad years in the 60s and early 70s, that was still my team. And then when they started winning during the Reggie Jackson, Thurman Munson era, that brought me great joy. And then in the late 90s, when Jeter and all those guys came up, then it just continued. So I've been a diehard fan, very religious fan, following them from the best to the worst, and always will.
Same here. We could compare book reports. We would have a whole span of like 40 years. I've got several from the 90s. I wrote a book on Bernie Williams and
how about that?
Reported on Jeter and all of those guys. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I got a chance. I'll deviate a little bit. In January of 1997, after the Yankees won their pennant and beat the Braves in the World Series, they had a celebration in New York City for the Yankees, and they wanted to bring a lot of old players back, and it was the first championship since 1978. So they wanted to make a big deal out of it, George Steinbrenner especially. So he invited a lot of the old players to come up and be there. And I mentioned my friendship with Cleet Boyer. Cleet asked me and my best friend at the time, the guy I used to do the card shows with, why don't you come up here and go to the event with me, and you can meet some of my teammates and what have you. And both of us were still in our young married life, and we didn't have a lot of money. And we said, well, Cleet, we can't afford that. And he said, well, you're not going to have to pay for anything. The Yankees are going to pay for it. You're my nephews. And so we went to the airport without a ticket in hand in 1997. Times are certainly different. Went up to the counter and said, we're Gerald and Mike, and we are going to New York on behalf of the New York Yankees. And the lady at the desk said, well, here's your tickets. And it said, compliments New York Yankees. And we flew to New York. Cleet arranged for a limousine to pick us up and take us to the hotel. And we were in the hotel with the team. And that night, and this, I'll finish on this, that night at our dinner table, it was me and my friend Mike, Cleet Boyer, Joe Pepitone, Derek Jeter, and Jorge Posada.
Oh.
And that was before cell phones. Didn't even think about a camera. Had no idea what it was going to be like. So that was like incredible. I left my seat at the table and went and called my wife. And I said, you're not going to believe this. I called my dad. I called my brother. And finally, I decided I got to get back to the table or I missed something. So we got to spend a lot of time with those guys. And the event was like a 3-day event. So every night after the event would end, we would go to the restaurant next door, which was Mickey Mantle's restaurant. We would eat, hang out, and both my friend and I were teetotalers. We didn't drink, but all of our associates did. So we would sit and listen to those stories, and the more they drank, the louder their stories got. And it was just an incredible weekend. I'd love to have a tape of it, but I have it in my mind. Yeah. And just one of the best times I could have ever had. Wow. But again, back to what I said about baseball people, Cleet Boyer was just the most generous guy. He had his gold glove hanging by a rawhide string on his mantle, and he'd give you the shirt off his back and never thought about himself as being a big deal. And when he was playing, other than Brooks Robinson, he was the best third baseman in baseball.
Yeah. How did you meet him?
We went to a baseball card show, and he was there, and we asked him to come to Birmingham. That was in Atlanta. We asked him to come to Birmingham and do an appearance for us, and he did, and he liked us and thought that we were honest, and he just asked us to travel with him a few times, so we did, and the rest is history.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that is so very cool. All right, that's a plenty good enough reason to be a Yankees fan. I'll allow it.
I can talk, Kelsey, I could give you 3 or 4 more stories, but you would either fall asleep or the power would go off or something happened.
No way. My face already hurts.
Yeah, no, we got time.
I have been so blessed with the connections I've been able to make through baseball and my Yankee fandom and the friends I've met. I've had more stories than I could count, and just it's unbelievable.
Well, you mentioned that people are calling. People are already inquiring about tickets for the game, because this is the first time a Major League Baseball game is going to be played at Rickwood Field, which is a pretty big deal. Now, did you say that it only seats 10,000 people? Is that the capacity?
We're thinking that for this game, we're going to lose about 1,500 seats to increase the handicapped availability to handle the press and some other things. So I'm thinking 8,500. So it'll be a hard sellout. And as soon as the tickets do go on sale, they'll sell out in minutes. They will, they'll go on sale, I think, and this is not anything written in stone, but I think they'll go on sale maybe around the end of February, 1st of March.
Okay.
And one thing for your viewers out there, I will tell you, it appears on our website. We are not in the ticket business at all. I'm like a one-man show, and I have been inundated for months now with calls from all over the country wanting tickets. And they look at our website, and they see the big banner that says, don't call Rickwood, and they run right by that till they find my phone number, my email address, or whatever, and they call and email me anyway. But we don't know anything about the ticket sales process, when they will actually start for sure, and what the costs are going to be and anything like that. So that's still up in the air, and we hope to learn something fairly soon so we can prepare for it.
Yeah, so that will all be through Major League Baseball. I thought you did a very fine job, and it was very clear on the site that, yeah, that's you're not who they go to for that, but there are lots of things that people can go to you for if they want to experience the stadium, even if, you know, for the 8,500 of us that are lucky enough to go to the game, awesome, but everybody else who wants to see it, there are tours available of the stadium. What other games or events happen throughout the year? How else can we experience it?
Well, we'll do tours daily during the summer, and it's free. You come in, and if you want to, if there's nothing going on, you can go out on the field and you can throw the ball or run the bases. If you want to spend time in our crudely put together museum, you can do that. You can buy a t-shirt. We can take you on the roof if the time is right. We have people that will come out and just bring a sack lunch and sit in the bleachers and eat on their lunch hour. We're not that far away from downtown in the business district. So we offer all those things. Plus, one of the more fun things we have is our Home Run Derby. And that happens on October 27th this year. It happens the day after Alabama plays Missouri. And we typically have four former big leaguers and two college kids. And we'll draw 1,000 to 1,500 people for that. It's very, very fan friendly. After that, the fans can go on the field. It's a real fun event, and it's become a new tradition. It's something that we hope to continue for a long time to come. And we haven't pinned down the guest for this year, but 2 years ago, we had Andrew Jones, who almost made the Hall of Fame this year. This year, or this past year, 23, we had Ryan Klesko. He was a great guest. So this year we're looking, so not sure. For the Cardinal fans out there, the names that have been presented to me thus far are Rick Ankiel and Jim Edmonds. So, you know, it might be good to follow up this big game with the Cardinal fans trying to come back to that. So, and then during the year, we really high level travel ball comes to Rickwood Field, and oftentimes we'll have a player there whose son. We'll have a player there whose father may have played in the big leagues. Like this past year, Jim Tomei, his son was there. And 2 years ago, a son of Manny Ramirez was there. So, you know, it's just it's a great place. And we expect that will only continue as time goes by.
Oh, I think this is just going to be so cool to get exposure for it. And people, obviously, there are going to be, you know, people banging down the door to try to get tickets when they do go on sale to come to the game. But I'm like, not that I could care less. I'd love to be at the game, but I just want to come experience the stadium now. And I hope it brings that level of excitement, you know,
I hope both of you will. And if you come to Birmingham, there's a lot of good places to eat. Like I said, we have a great Alabama Sports Hall of Fame. We have a small version of the Negro League Museum. It's not affiliated, but it's called the Negro Southern League Museum. And then we have some other things. Like the Midwest, the South is a really nice place to live, and people are friendly. And if you come to town, you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, that sounds great. I think the exposure, yeah, like Kelsey mentioned, the after effects of having this kind of event is going to be awesome for you guys for years to come.
Well, we hope so.
Yeah, I'm glad it's finally getting some attention on the national stage, because I like feel silly not knowing about it or knowing more about it and not having made a point to get out there. So hopefully lots of fans, I'm sure lots of fans will feel the same way.
Well, we have a lot of folks that will come to the ballpark now who are Birmingham area natives who will come in and say, I never knew this was here, or I never knew I could come over here. It's in some ways it is one of those secrets that's in your own backyard. And, you know, for so many, like myself, we went there as a child and saw games, and now we're able to go there as an adult, and in my case, be a part of its preservation. And in some cases, people can take their son or their grandson or their granddaughter and come out there and just have a good time. It's what it's all about.
I saw on your website that y'all do weddings there sometimes. Have you been to a wedding there?
We've had two weddings that I know of. We've had folks scatter ashes on the field of their dear departed. And we've had Miss Alabama came and did a photo shoot. We had a we were part of the Say Hey Willie Mays documentary, if you've seen that.
Yeah.
And we also were part of the Reggie documentary. And we, in the 90s, the Macanudo Cigar Company sent representatives there and filmed a few shots, still shots, that will still appear in newspapers and magazines to this day. Wow. So there's been a lot going on. And in 1915, there was a ladies' suffrage rally there, which is commemorated by a sign outside the park. Wow. So it was a gathering place, and it still is to some point. We have corporate events where a business can rent the ballpark and come out there, and their employees can play ball. We have a batting cage that can be turned into a pavilion for cookouts and things like that. This past year, we had a jazz concert or a jazz fest. And then in many years past, back in the 60s, the Ringling Brothers Circus came there. Let's see, Stevie Wonder, Kiss, Lynyrd Skynyrd. And going way, way back, for all the football fans out there, Alabama actually played some football games there in the 1920s. And so the ballpark's had a rich history. And when you own a ballpark like that, your whole purpose should be to make money. And over the years, they found a way to make money many, many different ways.
That is incredible. Yeah. I never would have thought about past baseball, what kinds of other events were held there. That's just fascinating.
And one thing will happen after this MLB game passes, we'll be really careful about what kind of events we have, because we don't want anything to damage that grass. And we don't have a commitment out of MLB for a second game, but they did two games in Iowa. And what we're hoping is that everything will go so well and the TV ratings will be high and the advertisers will be happy. We're hoping everything will go so well in that regard that they'll say, okay, we're coming back in 2025. Or maybe they say we're coming back in 2026, but we hope they'll come back. And our performance as a city and as a ballpark will play into that. But also, they made it really clear that how well we take care of the field will be one of the biggest factors in whether they come back. So we're going to have to watch the amount of games we play. We're going to have to step up our groundskeeping crew skills. I know we're going to have to buy new mowers and grooming equipment. So there's a lot that we have to do once the game is over, and we're committed to that. And hopefully we'll be positioned so that we can have a second game, whether it's next year in 25 or the year after that.
Yeah. Have you guys gotten a lot of support from the city of Birmingham to help with some of that?
Well, absolutely. The budget for all these repairs came in at about $5.5 million, and we had no ability to do that at all. So the city stepped up, and they have raised, or they have committed to pay almost the entire bill.
Wow.
We raised another $500,000 from local companies like the power company and the gas company and Blue Cross and Regions Bank, my former employer. So all those people have chipped in as well. And that money will be used to either supplement what the city's doing, make some other repairs, or put it into an account that we'll use to keep up the ballpark for the next couple of years. So we've had tremendous support. I can't thank the mayor and the council enough and often enough for what they've done, because for a long, long time, the ballpark was supported from the city, but not at the level that it is now. But they saw the promise of MLB coming, and they jumped in with both feet. And we at the Friends of Rickwood couldn't be more happy with the way they've helped us out.
That's amazing. Yeah, we didn't really dive into how MLB decided to, like, how the process even transpired. How did they approach you guys, or did you guys, like, put in for it?
Well, when I took over the executive directorship in early 21, the first thing I thought about was the news that they were going to do a game in Iowa. That was before they'd ever played it. And so I started trying to reach out to MLB, but that's a big organization and it's hard to get to the right person. And I really didn't have any success. And one day, and let's see, in August of 21, the Mississippi Braves were playing the Birmingham Barons in a series here, and a member of the coaching staff and three of the players from the Braves came over to look at the park. And we took those old gloves and we went out on the field and started tossing the ball around. And I struck up a conversation with a gentleman named Doug Mancelino, and he was the minor league fielding instructor and coordinator for the Braves. And he fell in love with the ballpark immediately. And he says, you know what? You ought to have a Field of Dreams game here. And I said, gosh, I'd love to, but I really don't know where to go. I've made a few phone calls. I'm not getting anywhere. And he said, well, I've been in baseball 40 years. I know some people. Can I call them on your behalf? And I said, fire away. So that was August. So October, I got an email from MLB. And they came down, and our pitch was, here's the deal. You did a game in Iowa at a baseball site that was built for a movie. This is a real Field of Dreams here. This is a place where we have a big picture on our wall of Willie Mays. I said, this is a place where this guy went out in the outfield and dreamed of being in the big leagues. This is a real Field of Dreams. And I don't know if that helped cement their idea or not, but they looked around, they took measurements, they had drone footage, they did all this stuff, and they said, okay, don't call us, we'll call you, but we're interested. So fast forward to February of 22, and I get a phone call, and they want to start the ball rolling and see where it goes. And after that, they did surveys of the ballpark, all the different things they thought needed to be done. They came back with a plan and presented that to the city and said, if you'll do this, we'll bring a game. And Birmingham really stepped up. And again, the funding for all the improvements is done by Birmingham and the business community. Major League Baseball is paying for the game day activities. They're paying for temporary clubhouses, temporary lights, all the things that go into a game they're paying for. But the things that will be left to us are the things we paid for. And everything fell into place. It couldn't have happened any better. There have been no real hiccups, you might say. I mean, every time something's come up that needed addressing, the city's been right there. And if the mayor were to see this podcast, I hope I'm bragging about him enough, but the mayor and his chief of staff have done a wonderful job helping coordinate this with MLB and getting us to where we are now.
Well, that's incredible. We thank you for, you know, the preservation that you've done and everything you've done to get it to this point. And we thank the city of Birmingham. This is so cool to be alive to see this.
And how amazing that it all started with an organic conversation that you had with someone in the Braves organization.
That's right. And that goes back to what I told you in my opening remarks. Baseball, yes, is all about people.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
You make friends over baseball. And when you do that, good things can happen. And that's an example of this.
Absolutely. Well, Gerald, we're going to throw the website for Rickwood Field in the show notes. We are also going to make sure to be even more explicit as we can be, that you cannot buy tickets there, but you can go visit the site, and you absolutely should. And, you know, we'll keep you updated if you want to follow the Babes Babes podcast on Twitter and Instagram, and subscribe here if you're watching on YouTube, or subscribe wherever you are listening on your favorite podcast platform. And we'll make sure to keep you updated when tickets do go on sale, as information starts to come out about that. As Gerald said, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we'll know some more about it. It's going to be the hottest ticket in Birmingham, that's for sure, in the middle of June. So
I want to thank you for having me on. I'm going to stand up and I'm going to show you a shirt that I was able to get made with Major League Baseball's permission. And with your permission, if the two of you will send me your mailing address and the size of shirt you like, I'm going to send you one. But
thank you so much.
MLB is coming, yes, to BHN, has a diagram of the ballpark and the name Rickwood Field and the date.
That is cool. So cool. What a great idea.
Are they going to, do you think, I'm sure they'll have merchandise available too.
They will have merchandise, and we will be able to sell Rickwood branded merchandise in our gift shop. The things that we sell will not be able to have a team name or anything related to MLB, but we can have Rick Woodfield plastered all over it. And so we hope to be able to do that. And that will allow us to broaden our scope of fandom and have Rick Wood shirts all over the country.
Yeah, lots of walking advertisement.
Absolutely.
Do you have a link to where people can buy that shirt?
Rickwood.com.
Okay,
great. Website. And it's a limited edition. We don't have that many left. We have quite a few, I guess, the short sleeve green shirts, which is what I'll be able to send you. But I don't know if we have any more of these or not. But if we do, they're probably double and triple X. So, but anyway, absolutely. There's other things on our website, too. We have some really cool signs and plaques. You can buy a bottle of Rickwood dirt. You can buy a Rickwood logo baseball. We have hoodies, all kind of things. So, and all those things are going right back into the preservation efforts. We're a nonprofit. So if anybody out there wants to donate money, they can donate through the website as well. And it's tax deductible.
Hey, great. Yeah. The website is very user friendly. So check that out. The shop I saw is there as well. And yeah, Gerald, thank you so much. This was so cool to hear from you and just the fact that you are a lifelong baseball fan who is just sharing in the passion of growing the game, but also preserving the history that is so much of what we love about the game and makes it so special.
Well, it's great to know some new fans. And like I said, baseball people are the best people, and you two are in that category. So I hope that you're able to come to Birmingham either for the game or some other time. And if you do, make sure you look me up.
Definitely. And go Yankees.
That's right. Go Yankees and go Cardinals.
And maybe, go Cardinals.
Maybe they could end up in the World Series.
Hey, that would be cool.
The Yankees probably have a better chance this year. So I guess, yeah, I'll get on board with you too there.
you know what about baseball? You never know.
That is very true. Especially at this point in the season, we're all tied for first and we're all tied for last. And that's what I love about it too.
That's right.
Thank you. Thank you again, Gerald. Of course, you can follow Jonna on Twitter at 90s Yanks Kid. You can follow me on Twitter at KBirdTweets. And like I said, just make sure that you're subscribed, you are rating and reviewing if you feel so inclined to do so. And maybe most importantly, just send this episode to a friend so they can hear about the great history of Rickwood Field and be ready to go for the next Babes Babes episode. We will catch you then. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Gerald.